You know, when I walked in this door, I said to Alice, I think I must be at heart a true evolutionary Catholic. But I don't ordinarily get to speak to whole groups of Catholics. And I realize when I speak to Catholics, I can be the most outrageous that I truly am. Because Jesus, as the source of this vision of being a Catholic, is the most far out, futuristic, evolutionary being that ever lived on planet Earth. But the fact is, we couldn't quite get the reality of what he said we could do until we had are going through the crisis of transformation toward the birth of a humanity capable of co-creating with the divine. So my prelude to all of this, after reading this book and making notes for you, is the degree to which I think the vision being held for these thousands of years has a completely new phase of reality. And it would be one of the great pleasures in my life to serve as a link between this great tradition and the future-oriented capacities of humanity that need to be linked with this in a way that works for the whole world. That was truly the original idea. But anything that gets narrowed gets separated. So I'm coming in as someone who comes from a Jewish, agnostic, secular, materialistic, competitive New York family. And I really got my basic religious opening from Teilhard de Chardin. Teilhard de Chardin was a Catholic, Jesuit, paleontologist, never published by the church in his lifetime, who saw God in evolution. And basically he spoke of the law of complexity consciousness. As systems become more complex, they jump in consciousness and freedom, from molecule to cell, to animal, to human. And he foresaw the time on Earth when the whole planetary body would become increasingly complex and would jump in consciousness and freedom. And he called it the Christification of the Earth. I believe he foresaw the Second Coming. And he said that it was able to happen because of the arising of the noosphere. The noosphere, in the word nous, is the mind sphere. We've had the geosphere, then the hydrosphere, the waters, and then the biosphere of life. And the noosphere originated with language. When we began to go outside of the genetic code to communicate, and for, let's say, whatever thousands of years since language, the human species has been building a super organism of capacity that includes language, all the systems. If you are on the phone, if you are watching TV, if you drove your car, if you're using language, you're in the noosphere. And what's happened in our lifetime is the noosphere has gained powers that we used to attribute to gods. We can blow up worlds. We can create new worlds. We can travel with the speed of light. We can put images of destruction or images of creation. The human species is literally at the threshold of being able to do the work without the consciousness of what the works are for. There's a real dilemma. As a futurist, before I had a Christ experience, I actually knew that we were going to take this jump because I researched the growing edge of science and technology and spirituality and social potential and I saw, we're taking a jump. This is actually a new species. We're actually going beyond the creature-human condition. And I'm going to talk about this later, but I just want to state this as my context, and then tell you some of my interpretations of this and how it relates to my own experience of the Christ. So she starts, my first chapter is called Metamorphosis, which is my great chapter. Is there a butterfly-like continuity in discontinuity that preserves the identity of all living beings? That's the question that Kathleen asked in this book. Well, if you look at the universal story of creation, from the origin of creation through the formation of earth life, animal life, human life, and now us, there is without question a continuity, not just simply in one person's lifetime, but a continuity of the whole process of creation that continually builds on itself more and more capacity. From, if you think of this incredible journey from subatomic particles to you and me sitting in this room now, is there a continuity of consciousness going through that sequence, if you look at it as a sweep? I believe the answer is yes. And one of the ways that a friend of mine, Chris Bache, put this, is that the universe relentlessly accumulates experience. It's a really true thing. For example, when you look with your eyes into my eyes, can you imagine how long it took for those eyes to have that capacity? They started as a teeny-weeny sensitivity to light. And it must be that, you know, over 100 billion of years, the capacity for the eyes to see, the ears to hear, the thumb. Every time I move my thumb, I go, wow! Now, does my thumb remember what it took to get it to do that? Mm-hmm. Not really. But you know what? With evolutionary consciousness, we have begun to remember what it took to create any of this. And that since the universe relentlessly accumulates experience, there is a very advanced thought that is now being generated. And I'm going to jump into it because it fits right in here. And here's the thought. There have been many views of life after death. There's the Hindu view of dissolving into the one. There is the Christian view of life everlasting. There is a Buddhist view that there actually is no self. Nothing is continuous. There is the purely secular view that you just die. Now, the view that's coming into form right now, and it is that when a person is in a higher state of consciousness, let's say expanded, non-ordinary state of consciousness, there is a deep tendency, instead of dissolving into the one, or going into a more static heaven in which you're just the way you have been before meeting your relatives. That actually there is a tendency in nature itself for there to be an increase in individuality at a universal scale, wherein when you die, you do not do what some of the, like the Buddhists believe, reincarnation, die and get reborn as a baby. which I think is a big waste of time. Back as baby and hardly remembering and going forward again. You actually gain continuity of consciousness forward. Now this is a very advanced thought, but I'm relating it to what Jesus said, and it's just amazing to me how these mesh. So the thought here is that as we go through this crisis of the birth, either of the destruction of our biosystem and the breakdown that is being predicted, or we somehow go through this, what we're seeing here is that the earth is actually a womb for universal life. The Mother Earth is actually giving birth through all her species and now through humans to a species capable of co-evolving with nature. That's a whole environmental, ecological awareness that this is our body. This is our body. This is our blood given for us, but for what? Not just sustainability. Given for us to transform into a species capable of co-creating with spirit, becoming co-evolutionary and co-creative, first on this earth, then in the solar system, then in the galaxy. Do you know we're part of one galaxy that has many, many planetary systems, and we're part of a universe with hundreds of billions of galaxies? You have to really allow that expansion of consciousness to get what I'm saying. Many of which may be wombs for life. And we are at that critical moment when our body, which is our extended body, is this planetary body, is stressed, is overpopulating, is polluting, is running out of its non-renewable resources. And it is at precisely this time that the word I got when I had the Christ experience was for the resurrection of the body politic. That's a big breath. The resurrection of the body politic would be that all of that which is loving, creative, innovative, oriented towards more life, more conscious life, more loving life, is actually beginning to connect into a new system greater than the sum of the parts. And if you were to even now do a planetary scan, if we could just kind of have a magic wand and scan the planet for what's emerging and creative in health, in education, in spirituality, in new energy sources, in conflict resolution, in personal growth, in spiritual evolution, if you could just do that right now, which we can't because our news media is an infantile nervous system and it has disempathitis. It's a bit of a chronic illness of the mass media. It's a nervous system that doesn't pick up what's creative. No, that's serious. It doesn't pick up what's emergent, what's loving, what's new. If we just get evolutionary eyes in this moment and we start seeing that and we realize that everything that rises converges, that's Teilhard de Chardin. Everything that rises converges. That's how we got from subatomic particles all the way up the chain of life, is by the converging of that which is innovative and creative. While things become extinct and die off, there's always this new emerging. So what I'm seeing here, the next point to make, the transfiguration at the universal level is what gives us some impulse to see this. The increasing complexity, the universe relentlessly accumulates experience. and the universe, the earth now, if you are at all familiar with internet and the enormity of social networking that's going on and the digital revolution, you know, when we got those pictures from Burma,
on cell phones.
They didn't have to use the mass television media. They couldn't. It's actually out. It's out of the big systems into the people. I see that we are actually one fraction of an evolutionary second. Behold, I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep. We shall all be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump. Is this the last trump? They say it is. You know, we can destroy our biosphere. That's the last trump right there. We shall all be changed. So I think putting this in real terms, in real time, that the planet, thank you, Alan, the planetary body is at the point of the crucifixion of itself, and the millions and millions of people suffering, as Alice was talking, out of the most terrible suffering, and we feel it. There is a rising everywhere, in every field, in every discipline, way beyond any organized structures of this world. People, like sitting in this room, whose consciousness has already shifted, who are not there trying to dominate and control, who are already innovative and creative. And because of our evolved nervous system of the planetary body, I think it's about to connect. And I'm personally involved in some of these efforts. And in the last week, and I really feel super excited today, because I just got a call from some friends. Excuse me, who are very high-level technology entrepreneurs, who said to me, just this year we can do the vision of connecting what's working worldwide. And it's all to do with internet and how it works. And you know what I think it's being connected for? I call it the planetary smile. The planetary smile is a very simple little code word for what Teilhard called the Christification of the Earth. That, in more traditional language, is the Second Coming. In some language that I received about it, it would be the planetary Pentecost. Because there are millions and millions and millions of people in every field and function who are already feeling connected to the Earth, to each other, to Spirit, and wishing to move our planet beyond this terrible suffering that we are mainly causing out of the illusion of separate consciousness everywhere. And that consciousness is shifting. As somebody said to me recently, well, where do you get your faith from, Barbara? I said, well, I really get my faith from noticing the 14 billion years that came before us. How much faith does it take to notice that apparently, evidently, the universe flared forth out of the mind of the cosmos, the mind of God, and created all this without my help. And yours either, I said to the disbeliever. Who did that? Now, the scientists can say it's pure accident. That seems really incredible when you look at the fine-tuning of the design. The creationist would say an external God created it. I think that is not as likely for my understanding of it, to the fact that the whole thing is inspired by God. Every atom, every molecule, every cell, every mind is God back. So what I'm going to say here is that the transfiguration of the universe, the sequence of changes, this is from Kathleen, the increasing complexity, the universe relentlessly accumulates experience. I believe we are about to experience a radical transformation on planet Earth, or devolution. And it's very much like a difficult birth. Because birth does not mean everything will work automatically. Birth is dangerous, but natural. I believe it's absolutely natural that a planet would hit a limit to growth of its intelligent species. We didn't even know we had an environment 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
we cannot be too hard on ourselves. We were just always moving out. We didn't know. Then suddenly in the 60s and 70s, you saw shells from outer space, and the environmental woke up. We had our first Earth Day in 1970, and there was hardly a word for environment. So most of our leaders, and including ourselves, when we were in learning, we didn't learn any of this. So I actually have a certain degree of compassion on all of us, because the condition is radically new. And so let's go back here. Let's just say for a moment that the universe has produced this Earth. This Earth has produced life. Life has produced conscious life, and this conscious life is becoming aware of its own power to evolve or self-destruct. And it has got the resources, the technology, and the know-how to restore the Earth, free the people, and explore the universe. And if we were to do that in the next 20 to 50 years without destroying ourselves, we would be a species so much greater than we are right now. And I'll tell you why I think that in just a minute, that the only model I have ever seen of what that would be like is the life story of Jesus. Not only the birth and the incarnation and the awareness of the Father and I are one, that means the creative process of the universe and I are one. And that really is the truth. We're just inching up on it. It doesn't mean a static Father in heaven who is one. It means that the principle of creativity that is animating this entire universe and each human being is one. If you have seen me and you have seen the Father. That's what he was telling us. And when you know that, you have some awareness, possibly, of how to use all the power. So I would like to take just to say to you a couple of things and then tell you what happened to me. How long do I have here, Alan?
Well, we break around 11 or whatever is comfortable for you.
Okay.
And then you still have time afterwards if you want to wrap something up.
Okay.
Then take questions.
Okay. I want to say a couple of things before we go on here. One of Kathleen's point is amazing seeds. And the question is, what is a body? And I'd just like to say for a minute, if you have evolutionary consciousness right now, and you realize that you may be composed of 100 trillion cells that seem to be coordinated without your help. In the most totally amazing way over and beyond, according to the latest biologists and scientists, what the genetic code could organize, because this is way beyond just the genetic code, because these cells right now, in order for us to see and hear and talk and move, are coordinated by an internal process that totally mystifies. I mean, I've heard Deepak Chopra speak about this, and he describes how you would have to see trillions of cells flashing signals like this one, and you don't know. I mean, there's nothing fast enough to do it. And we don't even know how they do it. And they are doing it. So this we don't have to have a lot of faith. Actually, we seem to be here. They're coordinated, and there are, I have been told, that if you took the DNA, now this DNA is a little information code that must go all the way back to the earliest cells, talk about accumulated experience, that's coded with it, and if you took the DNA in every cell and stretched it out, it would reach, it's 100 billion miles. You'd have moon and back, moon and back, moon and back. Your DNA. All coded in there. And each of us is a resume of the whole universal story. In other words, if you've seen yourself in the mirror, you've seen how the universe shows up as a person. It's really true. And so the body, just that, is itself such an incredible miracle, and even more than that, it's mostly empty space. It's mostly empty space. See, you can get this feeling of the slight hysteria or joy that the process of creation, which is my word for God, is the process orientation of God. There's the eternal and then there's the creative. That's what's working in us now. Now, the Eastern Church, one of the things Kathleen said, sees the future as our deification. Okay, let's say that that's exactly true, but like the word deification separates us out from the process of creation. Mm-hmm. And it therefore is an archaic word for, I think, what's actually happening here. That I would say deification could be translated into co-creator. Because if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. If you've seen the process of creation as your own expression of itself, you put yourself into the planetary life cycle where we're either going to self-destruct or self-evolve here with all our new powers, then you could see the immensity of a co-creative human, which in the past we would have called a god. And you know, I've often wondered if we were to land on another planetary system that was just the way we were when Jesus was born, and we came in our spacecraft, and we had on all our equipment, and we had our TV sets, and we were, and they thought, what would they think of us? And wouldn't we have to tone way down to even begin to communicate what we might want to tell them? Mm-hmm. And since I'm sort of a evolutionary futurist and I've always loved the space program, I'm not saying that Jesus was a space astronaut that came in, but I do believe that, I mean, this is sort of a shocking thought to take some of this literally, that what would be the virgin birth? What actually might have happened? Is it possible that we've already seen that light can carry DNA? I'm not saying that's what's happened, but when I was doing my Bible studies and I came across this from a totally futuristic point of view, I thought, you know what? We're going to be able to do that. We're already doing many virgin births all the time. Who knows what that beam of light was? It's very good to keep an open mind. And just when the historical scholars are mythologizing everything, the evolutionary futurists are evolutionizing everything. And we're open to a far greater degree of what might have happened if a truly advanced human being had arisen on planet Earth with the message of how we should all love one another, love God above all else, love nature, love yourself as me. It's the right message. So I want to tell you what happened, and I'm going to go to give you my view of this. Let's look at the Christ story from an evolutionary perspective. Let's see evolution as a continuous process of transformation from subatomic particles to us, quantum jump after quantum jump, and let's see it inspired by the deep process of creation, or the evolutionary intentionality of the divine. Let's see it that way. The evolutionary intentionality of the divine. That's the way I see it. Now, this is not falsifiable or provable any more than God is falsifiable or provable. Or that there is nothing but accident is falsifiable or provable. So I decided to pick up the thought that gives most life, most joy, most love, most creativity, and can't be falsified. It can't be proven, but it can't be falsified, so I'm going to go with it. And I want to make just a small point here, that the ideas we think create reality. As ye believe, so it shall be done. It matters. It's not a neutral universe. And as we get more and more creative, everything that we believe is affecting reality. So let's take the biggest, broadest possible belief. Human evolution is inspired by this. We have moved from Homo habilis, Homo erectus, Homo Neanderthal, Homo sapiens, Homo sapiens sapiens. Why would it stop here? Mm-hmm. With a little furry biped like ourselves, with an enormous spirit, it's obviously not finished. So it would be absolutely impossible to believe that this was the end of evolution. So I think that Jesus was a unique demonstration of the next phase of human evolution. And I think of all the great spiritual masters of the world, that this is the one that carried the code. And when I say the code, I mean the code for more life. The code for life abundant. And much as all the great religious traditions have to offer us, they don't have this code. And this is not politically correct. And every great faith has its enormous contribution to make. But the one that the Judeo-Christian has to make is the belief in the everlasting, ever-evolving future for the person as an evolved being in a new body. That is a very different view than I'm going to dissolve into the one. Or that there is no self at all. Mm-hmm. It's very, and it, you can include all the others, but when I got the Jesus story, I thought, oh my God, this is closer. Now, I'm going to tell you just briefly what happened, read you a few passages, and then we'll have some discussion. I was, and I may have told you this last time, and it doesn't matter, because it's worth hearing again. It's like you wouldn't say, well, I've heard the Lord's Prayer, therefore I'll never I was in Santa Barbara in 1980 to write a book on the future of humanity. I took a day off, I got lost, I started to see a little sign that said Mount Calvary Monastery. Mm. How many of you here know Mount Calvary Monastery? Wow, we should have a meeting there. Alex, we really should. And I started to go up and up that mountain, and then I landed there, and I got out, and there was a group of hang gliders jumping off the higher mountain, mm-hmm. and they were floating in butterfly-colored wings above the cross at Mount Calvary Monastery. And with that image of the masses of the whole club of people floating there, the I would say the presence of this presence of the living Christ came through. And here are the words that I wrote. My resurrection was a signal of all of yours. Why do you suppose I submitted to the calumny of Calvary but to demonstrate that the physical body can and must be transformed? The resurrection was an early attraction signal to the human race of what can be done to love of each person as a member of one's own body and of God above all else. The intensity of that love, the power of that connectedness, is the key to the resurrection, now known as the transformation. So we're taking the idea of the resurrection into the transformation, not only of the person, but of the whole body politic. Because you can't just go singly at this stage. The resurrection was a future forecast of an approaching new norm. The transformation of Homo sapiens to Homo universalis is the acting out of that forecast by the human species. What I did alone, now all can do who choose to love God above all else, their neighbor as themselves. That great commandment of pure love, combined with the knowledge of God's processes of creation gained by science and technology in the past 2,000 years, is the formula for victory. Now just take that for a moment, that science and technology is the mind's understanding of how nature works, the gene, the atom, the brain, and the ability to create technological extensions of nature in such a way that you transcend the creature-human condition of animal-like death, planet-boundedness, the limitations of the human mind. If you study the growing edge of science and technology right now, you will see already we're having extended intelligence, extended life, extended space. We have astronauts and we're going to be going back to the moon. We're going to have habitats in space. You have extended resources if you actually look at the renewable energy systems. We have all the resources that we need. And if you take it even one step further, what they call zero-point energy, the quantum vacuum, which is not empty space, but actually, according to physicists, is filled with almost infinite energy, that if we were able to tap into it, which some of them say we can, we would transcend the entire economic system of scarcity. Mm-hmm. And there are scientists who tell me that unless we had a crisis as strong as global warming, where we can't keep growing the old way, and we can't bomb it, we can't kill it, we can't fight it, we have to do something to change our own behavior. Isn't it the perfect crisis for a species of self-centered consciousness like ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
Evidently, it's what we need.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost lost my point there. Mount Calvary, 2,000 years ago, was a signal of resurrection through death of this body. Mount Calvary now becomes the signal of the transformation of this body through love and knowledge. So instead of denying the importance of all these new sciences and technologies, what we need to do is bring them in. Co-evolve with them and actually learn together what might be the vast potential of the spiritual insight of God as our creative intelligence, combined with love of each other as ourself and love of nature and world as our body, combined with these. I love the high technologists. I don't know why. I've always loved them. I love the space scientists. Jonas Salk was one of my first teachers. And he took me to these biological labs, and they had things on their door, stamp out death. I had a call once from Eric Drexler, who invented nanotechnology. You know what nanotechnology, you build atom by atom by atom. And he called me up one day, and he said, Barbara, you know, I think we can do resurrection. I said, well, it's about time, Eric. He said, what do you mean it's about time? He was horrified. I said, well, don't you think that's what the whole Western civilization has been committed to? And what he meant was he could take the DNA of the very, very simplest organism and reconstitute it. Now, he wasn't thinking of the resurrection of Jesus Christ. But when I once had an event at the World Future Society, where I was a founding board member, and this was called Jesus the Future Human. And I invited the astronauts, the computer experts, the people studying longevity and how to overcome aging and death. And I said, I want you to tell me what you can do, and I'm going to read a passage from the Bible that says that's what Jesus did. And it was absolutely filled to overflowing with world futurists who had never thought of this. And it's true. And I'm not saying that it's a one-on-one thing, but I think the culture that got the aspiration and intention for life everlasting is actually creating the capacity for life ever evolving. Mm-hmm. And now it's a global phenomenon. But it did definitely start with those monks, and they believed that they were going to be in the name of Christ, that they could do all this, and they hated the women because they didn't like Eve, and all of that stuff. Now we have Eve, she's risen again, and she's definitely in there. And if I may say so, I think the feminine co-creator, the feminine incarnation of the Father, seen as the great creating process of the universe itself, that the feminine co-creator is the next stage of our species when she can combine with the masculine co-creators, like give guidance to the masculine co-creators, that the purpose of this power is life ever evolving. It's not war and overconsumption. But it's not nothing. It's not simply return to the past. We're going forward, and look at how many women are in this room. And I have to tell you something funny. Today, at 2:30, I'm going to be interviewed for Oprah Winfrey's radio show by Marianne Williamson on menopause. and I have coined a phrase that women over 50 may indeed be entering regenopause. And regenopause is when you are no longer going to reproduce the species. You have the opportunity to give birth to the authentic feminine self and its expression in the world. And because women over 50, there's no social pattern and nobody particularly cares what we do. The developed world, particularly wherever women have the chance, are, I believe, in a new bioevolutionary life cycle of extended life, extended intelligence, extended vocation, life purpose. And getting back to Jesus, I actually feel when he said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father, as he said, you will do the works that I do, and greater works than these will you do in the fullness of time. And we know that he understood the women probably better than any other leader at that time. We are now hearing that his relationship with Mary Magdalene was very, she was a great being. But the culture wouldn't allow it. The culture wouldn't allow it. The thing that's happened in the last 50 years is the best of the culture is calling us forward. We're not being killed in this society. Therefore, wherever women have this freedom, we have the greatest, greatest possibility in partnership with the men. But there's a leadership quality here that I would like to offer to evolutionary women and to co-creative women, that it's by seeing the evolutionary potential of our species and each person's part in it, and speaking that word and that gospel right now at a time of disillusionment and a more regressive fundamentalism. This is a big call. And this is really the call of my life as to how to contribute to that. Now, I'll just read one more thing and then I'll stop. I believe that the Bible is coded evolution. And I'm going to read you one or two other passages from this book, Revelation. I did the whole New Testament, Gospels, Acts, Epistles. This only is the third part of it. And sometime if you'd like to have a study group on the evolutionary understanding of the New Testament, I would love to participate.
Oh boy.
So here's 1 Corinthians 15:21. For since by man came death, by man also by man came also the resurrection of the dead. When I did this writing, I didn't ever think, I don't believe this, what does this mean? I just wrote. And it wasn't channeled. It was just open. And I never said that this was a channeled writing. With man came the awareness of death. The animals die, but they don't know they're going to die. With man came the awareness of death and the effort to overcome it. All of human history can be interpreted as the effort to overcome the limits of mammalian existence, eating, sleeping, reproducing, and dying, through tools, language, religion, and art, and today through science, industry, technology, and the conscious activation of our human potential, we are striving to overcome the limits of the material world and the physical death of our bodies. And I won't have time to tell you all these things, but I've been researching all the growing edge of technology, and what they're saying is they feel that we're heading towards an indefinite lifespan. And it starts with just taking care of yourself now. Hang on. This is from Ray Kurzweil. Secondly comes the actual, let's see, because this is the actual aging process and understanding that. And then the third one is nanotechnology, where they can actually, the little nanobots can go in and clean up anything, create anything. And this man, Ray Kurzweil, has written a book, The Singularity is Near, and also The Fantastic Voyage. And many people say he's right, and many people say he's not right. We don't know. But the very fact that sophisticated scientists and technologists and biologists are saying animal-like death is a phase of evolution. Single cells didn't die, they simply divided to reproduce. Then death was invented. And multicellular life dies and gets through sexual reproduction. We are at the threshold, possibly, of life extension. And if we go into the solar system and create habitats in space, we'll probably speciate. That means there will be new species emerging. And that's just the beginning. Because if we have 14 billion years behind us, we have hundreds of billions of years in the future. So, I think that's enough.